Today's episode of Current Geek is brought to you in part by GoToAssist by Citrix, the number one global market leader in remote support. Easy-to-use, cloud-based remote support solution allows you and your team to solve problems faster than ever. More information during the show. Go to GoToAssist.com and do the Try It Free button now.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current in all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That is Tom Merritt.
I love Friday evening.
Yay. I do too, dude.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm stoked. Hey, I'm actually really excited. Really
do you
excited.
Need a McRib?
No McRibs.
Nope. Shamrock Shake?
Nope. I'm good? I'm going to get theater nachos tonight. That's my plan.
Theater nachos.
Yeah. This local
plastic cheese.
The local theater I go to has actually pretty good nachos.
They have good nachos.
It was nice. Nerdtacular 2010 was the theater, so you'll be familiar with it.
Oh, I know that theater.
Yeah, and they have the nachos actually aren't bad, so we're going to have kind of armchair nachos in the theater.
I had the nachos at that theater, and they were quite
good. Okay, right? I mean, compared to what you're used to, it was not bad. And we're going to see The Equalizer, so maybe next week I'll report back on my nerd out moment, my autopilot moment with an old TV show made new again.
The reboot.
Yeah.
Pilot.
That might be a pilot to do one day if we ever get back to it. Hey, everybody. Yeah, we're thrilled to be here. It's me and it's Tom, and we have guests, as you might suspect or ascertain. I'm going to start with Kristen Brandt. You know her as one half of the Manic Mommies. She is returning guest, and we are happy to have her here. Hello, Kristen.
Hello.
It's good to see you.
I have to say, armchair nachos make me think of things that, like, my kids might find in our armchair. Not, like, something yummy to eat.
Look, Mommy, we made armchair nachos.
Yeah. Exactly. Mama dug in here a little bit, found me some lunch.
Doesn't sound good at all now that you say it.
No.
I'm used to seeing you in Instagram photos where you're riding a bike or running a marathon and proving how unhealthy the rest of us are. So this is a little weird.
Now I'm just sitting here on my duff drinking a beer.
Oh, well, good for you.
See?
It is Friday night.
You do
night.
All the other stuff so you can sit on your duff.
Well, someone I know is one of the hardest working podcasters in the World of Warcraft arena and is never sitting on her duff, unless she's recording a show, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, Jules Scott here from the Torin Think Tank. Hello.
Yay. Hi.
It's good to have you here.
I am so excited to be here. It's like kind of crazy.
You have been on our list, my kind of virtual list that just hangs out in my head for a very long time. And for whatever reason, it just never pops up right when I'm like, all right, who to call this week? That finally occurred to me this week. Let's get Jules in here.
Well, I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm here. I'm here. So thank you, Scott.
Well, it's awesome to have you. Thank you for being with us. We're going to start the show off like we often do, or when I say often, I mean always, with stuff up top.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Lay it on me, Tom.
Well, Gavra submitted this to our Current Geek subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. I encourage all of you to go take a gander, maybe do some voting or even submitting. It's an excellent Polygon interview with Blizzard CEO Mike Morhaime and lore master Mr. Chris Metzen. Mm. You probably didn't see this yet, Scott, so let me explain it to you. They talk at length about the company's decision to cancel Titan. Mm. Jules, you probably haven't heard of this, but Titan was a game that they were working on. It had been in development for 7 years. Metzen called the decision excruciating. The two suggested that smaller scale Blizzard games like Hearthstones and even the forthcoming Heroes of the Storm helped the studio realize they didn't need to limit themselves only to MMOs. Quote, the discipline of knowing when to quit is important, Metzen said, presumably while arms folded and levitating. And then Morhaime said, we didn't find the fun.
Yeah, so I love this about Blizzard. I know a lot of people are unhappy and sad, and I'm sad not to get the game or even to find out more about what it was about, and hopefully maybe that some of that will be transparent in the future. Maybe they'll do a little post-mortem or something. I don't know. They're not known for that, but they are known for canceling games after long periods of development. And you can add now to that list Titan, and that list included Warcraft Adventures and Starcraft Ghost and many others we don't even have names for.
Dance studios.
Yeah. Yes. The dance studio. You're going to make a good point. Flying Combat. There was another one that didn't happen, but it's weird because I talked to Metzen 2 weeks ago or about a week and a half ago.
Great interview, by the way. If anybody has checked that out, yeah, go to theinstance.net right now and download it.
Thank you. I think even if you don't, even if you're not into the game and just want to listen to somebody talk about the creative process, that it's an insane interview. But anyway, this is me with a little 2020 hindsight, okay? But I sensed that part of the power of that interview was that maybe he was on the precipice of an announcement like this and was feeling a little, not beaten down, but maybe a little apprehensive or a little kind of had a need to just look at this body of work and to talk about creativity because he was about to lose a big thing he had probably thrown a lot of his guts and his heart into. Because surely he knew this when I talked to him. I don't know. Who knows? But Jules, how are you feeling about Titan going away?
I wasn't surprised, obviously, with the changes that they were having, pushing it back. It was something that kind of spoke to them having some difficulties. But I gave this a lot of thought when it came out, the news came out, and I thought about how Blizzard is perceived in the industry. And to like, I am totally in agreement with you, Scott, about how they, it's like, the best move they can make when they can say, I can walk away from this after 7 years of development and say, I'm okay with this. We didn't do what we expected to do, and we're going to move on to bigger and better things, because that shows how much power they have.
Well, that's a big part of it, but it also is a reminder that this is the kind of their core mission statement. This is part of who they are, part of their culture, and they've always done it, even when things were tight and even when they weren't a giant in the industry, they were still willing to cut cord on something that just wasn't working. And compare that to so many projects from so many other companies who force something to launch when it's not ready or not done or simply to appease shareholders or whatever the reasoning might be. I mean, this could not have been a simple communication between them and Activision or others who are invested in the financial end of this. But I get the feeling this is another place where Blizzard says, you know what, guys, this is part of our DNA. Who we are a company who want to make amazing experiences. And if we don't feel like we're going to deliver one, we're going to stop making it.
Yep.
And that is such a hard thing to do. And when Morheim calls it a discipline, it is truly that. And the bigger the stakes are, the bigger that company gets, the more money they have, the bigger that those stakes are. And the fact that they're still willing to do it, to still cut cord when it needs to be cut, is an amazing kind of thing. You don't see this everywhere else.
You do not. And the other thing, the other thing I wanted to talk about with this was how entertainment companies are just, they're like put it out there and be done. And then they have to go and they have to entertain us again. It's not like they just put out a food product and we go and we buy it and we like it. And then we have to go and say, do we want to buy this again or not? We go, we play a game, we finish it and we go, what else you got for me, Blizzard?
Yeah.
And it's the same with entertainment, with movies. And so they are under so much pressure. So I think that's even more of a speaking to their strength as a company and the way that they do things, the humility that they have.
Kristen, you are an example of corporate masterfulness and things.
Well,
and things. I like the and things. That's on my business card,
sure,
actually.
Sure.
Okay, so I have no idea what this game is. So, I'll admit that, but
that's why I want to hear this, because you come to this with zero bias, which I like.
No,
so how do you feel about a company that can just sort of close the door on a thing this
big?
Well,
I think it's a good idea. First of all, I'm a big fan of Freakonomics, and they had a great podcast about quitting, about like, you know, the power of quitting, the economics of quitting, and, you know, the fact is, from a business standpoint, well, yes, it seems, you know, it means they can put the brakes on things and stop it. They're also undoubtedly looking at it from an economic standpoint and saying, okay, we can put it out, but we still have to promote it. We have to market it. Yeah. We have to build websites and advertising and the amount of money that they're going to pour into it. And if at the end of the day, they're not satisfied with the results, they know their audience. So it's going to do more damage to them to put out a game they're not proud of that they know doesn't really speak to their audience, and that they have to, you know, you can't just go, okay, here it is, like, we're done. You got to do all that other stuff.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool. I think it's great when you see a company really saying like this isn't right.
Yeah.
And if they can put it as simply as it's just not fun, I think a lot of us have to kind of say at the end of the day, like, is what I'm doing fun?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, we say, Aaron and I talk about that with Manic Mommies all the time. Like, Are we still having fun? Because if we're not, this is not worth it.
And if the answer is yes, then you keep going. And if it's not, I mean, I think that that's really their core thing. So, Tom, if I came to you and said, okay, let me do this. I'm going to play the role of internet troll. You ready for this? Here we go. Name another thing that Blizzard has done that took them 7 years and they launched and then, you know, name another game that they spent 7 years on. Just name one of those.
Well, I would assume World of Warcraft.
How about all of them? Pretty much freaking all of them. And that's what kills
me. No, they didn't spend 7 years on the original Warcraft.
That's true. They didn't. And they didn't spend that on Hearthstone. They certainly didn't spend that on not yet.
Well, actually, we don't know. We don't really know when the start dev time on some of these things
is. That's true. But we do. We have a really good idea on Diablo. We know that Diablo 3 started development like 01, shortly after Diablo 2 hit. Technically, that's when it started. A lot of changes occurred, but still, that's when they started. So there are plenty of examples of 7+ years, and these games go ahead and come out. But the idea that the time had, it's weird to see the fans go, well, you spent so much time with it, you may as well just put it out. And I think they've forgotten the position of that company in the market that they're in, because that's just not what they do. And if they did, it'd be a huge mistake. So, thanks, Blizzard, and keep on doing what you do, because we like you for that.
I think a lot of people think, oh, they've wasted 7 years, and that's absolutely not true. I know the way this stuff goes internally with development, and they will take things that they learned, and it will show up, and it probably has already shown up in other games. So is that as good as putting out the game you spent 7 years on? No, I'm not trying to equate it with that. But it's not like all that development was totally wasted. I have read rumors to the effect that part of the Titan team is still together and will be working on something themselves. So there may be parts of this that they're going to, you know, go back to the drawing board and try something else with. Who knows?
I agree. And there's one tiny last thing I'd say about this, and I'm going to go into detail on the instance tomorrow when I get with my, my co-host and talk about it. But I think it is very telling that the company who owns and has beaten and won the MMO space for the last 10 years is evaluating the MMO space and deciding that they don't think they're ready to try to be in it again. Mm. That says something about that market that nobody's talking about in the aftermath of this. And it's not that that market's a failure or any of that. It's just that it has changed a lot, and almost like what they've invented has forced them to reevaluate, because what they invented made everybody else scramble and come up with new payment methods and new ways of making money and scrambling for a way to have a niche in that space, because they're so dominant there that now they're having to look at themselves and say, well, we don't even know what this is anymore. It definitely isn't the market it was 7 years ago. So anyway, it's fascinating stuff. We'll see as that all transpires and what we end up getting out of it.
All right, Mike P. Kennedy let us know that Netflix hired a cultural anthropologist to conduct cultural research on spoilers. So stop listening right now if you don't want to know what he found out, because that would be a spoiler.
Yeah. We have a spoiler alert. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Here you go.
How about a booby?
That's Veronica Belmont.
That's nice. That's an excuse for you to play that sound.
Oh, all right.
The New York Times interviewed Grant McCracken, who found that spoilers used to be just a faux pas, but they have now grown and evolved into a wide variety of flavors. The power play spoiler, who shares plot details to exercise social dominance.
Whoa.
The impulsive spoiler, who operates from sheer excitement. He just can't stop himself. The shameless spoiler, who believes that once a show is live, it's fair game. She's going to spoil it for everybody. And then the clueless spoiler, who is, according to Jenny Josephson, who helped work on the show today and wrote some of these, is named Jenny Josephson.
Yeah.
And she is very sorry for all the damage she caused talking about 80s movies on Daily Tech News Show, because who hasn't seen Top Gun by now?
Right.
Finally, the newest addition, the coded spoiler, who manages to talk about content in a way that demonstrates their pop culture expertise to those in the know and doesn't ruin it for anyone else.
I don't know which one. All right, Kristen, which one are you? Do one of these follow you?
Oh, I'm not. What kind of spoiler am I?
Do you want to know? There's actually a quiz you can take.
Oh, really?
Oh, I love it. One. Yes, I can tell. So we'll use Kristen as an example on this one.
All right. Okay. How do you do it? Are you going to ask her? Okay, go.
Yeah. So have you ever spoiled a show or movie for someone else? Nope, yup, or maybe?
Nope.
Come on. We've all done it. You say nope or I mess up.
All right.
I'm going to go with choice. I'm going to go I fess up.
Did you spoil it on purpose? Of course not. Or yes.
Of course not.
Then why'd you do it? I don't know. Or excitement. It just slipped out.
I don't know.
You are a clueless spoiler.
Awesome. No, you know what? So, I do this. I think I fall in that category. I never do it to show prowess or to, you know.
Okay. First of all, let's go on record that spoiling something doesn't show prowess to anyone. All right. Like, let's just get rid of that one. Right.
Yeah. I tried to discipline my dogs with spoilers and they didn't recognize it.
Okay. Here's the funny thing. I think that if you are talking about an 80s movie, spoil away. It's your own, you know, bad luck. You haven't seen Ferris Bueller. All right.
Right.
But in our house, we are very anti-spoiler because I don't have time to see movies and my kids do. So I'm always like, no, I don't know what I want to watch the movie at some point. So it's reached the point that yesterday, Sophie, who's 9, was trying to read me her book report about Inkheart. It's a pretty, it's not a new book.
Oh, Inkheart. Got it.
Right. And she goes, and then what happened? She's like, oh, I can't tell you this because it'll spoil the ending. And I go, sweetie, that's not an answer. And she goes, no, I answered it, but I can't tell you because you said you want to read it.
Oh.
I was like, oh, okay.
Well, that's a very careful thing.
I have trained them well.
I also do this bottom one thing a lot where I'll just talk around it.
You are a master at this, Scott Johnson.
Yeah, I've had some experiences. Like on TMS, I was famous for, what was the thing I didn't spoil though? I'm famous for not remembering what I didn't spoil, but it was something I totally didn't spoil. But the way I told the story, if you knew what I was talking about, you absolutely knew what I was talking about. There was no question.
Game of Thrones.
So you showed your prowess.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That
whenever
was it.
I do that, though, someone in like a chat room or email says, you spoiled it because I've read that book or seen that movie and what you said spoils it. I'm like, you only know that because you already saw it.
Yeah.
So it didn't spoil it for you. You don't need to be assigned as the spoiler police. If it didn't actually spoil it for anybody, it doesn't. You're spoiling it by pointing it out and saying that's a spoiler in case you didn't realize.
Yeah, I think I told a story. I think it was Game of Thrones, and I was telling the story about a red viper, like the Dodge Viper.
Yes,
and there was that. Was that the one? And if you haven't seen Game of Thrones, it made zero sense.
You're the coded spoiler.
I kind of like it. That's an okay one for me because two things happened. One, I didn't spoil anybody, and two, I got to be a little creative. So I think that last one is like the one we may want to aspire for.
He's like the snake eyes of spoilers.
But now I'm power playing about the way I spoiler. So maybe I'm that top guy now.
In the context of the conversation.
Sure. Not a power.
Scott, if you really want
to
know.
My mutant ability is to spoil movies.
Perfect. What'd you say, Jules?
If you really want to know how to get what your spoiler is, go to spoilers.netflix.com. That's where I found the quiz.
Mm.
And that's also the place where they can like do the random spoilers that we were talking about.
Fun. So
yeah,
much fun.
That's really fun.
Although I had to quit one. I was in the middle of like a random 5 or 6. I'm like, I've seen all these so far. This is great. I'm totally enjoying this. And then something came up. I was like, oh no, I've not seen that. I had to alt tab out of that thing. Before I get spoiled by anything. And Kristen, if you haven't messed with that, you totally should. Especially because you haven't seen hardly any movies lately and you don't like being spoiled. I think that would be a real good time for you.
I just saw Captain America.
Oh, the new one, the Winter Soldier deal or the first one? Did we lose her?
I think so.
I think we lost her. She
failed. It was a spoiler defense. Her broadband shut down.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, now you're back. You're back.
Hi.
Now you're fine. Which Captain America?
The Winter Soldier.
Oh, good. If you were talking about the first one, I was going to ridicule you and make fun of you. Okay, good.
No, not that far behind, but I just saw that 2 days ago.
It's great, right?
It was great.
Yeah.
My favorite scene was the one in where they used the random 80s movie reference, and I was like, that's my favorite part of it.
Oh, you're going to love today's quiz then. That'll be fun.
Hey, speaking of 80s,
yes.
There's a new Star Trek movie in the works.
What?
Yeah. Because Star Trek happened in the 80s. That was my attempt there. Anyway, that nice means job. It's time for the next round of To Chat or Not To Chat. Dee Basinge passes along a Badass Digest rumor that the script for the third rebooted Star Trek movie contains a scene that reteams William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy for the first time since they sailed off into the stars at the end of Star Trek VI. Shatner took to Twitter, however, to say, no one had contacted. And someone who may or may not have been Trek 3 director Robert Orci took to the comments section at trekmovie.com to say, Not in my interest to confirm or deny anything because it limits my options, which is essentially saying nothing. Yeah. After which, Orsi grabbed a bottle of Romulan ale and stalked off, muttering something about no-win scenarios.
Nice. Shatner's been on record as saying,
"Hey,
all right, that's as good as I got." yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well, whatever. I've been going through this thing in my head lately. There was this time. I mean, the internet pretty much saved these people. There was a time when everybody had written Shatner off as nothing but a lunatic and a weirdo with a strange album, and why did he sing that on stage and all that stuff, and his weird beatnik freaking poetry he used to do, all that stuff. We kind of written him off. TJ Hooker was terrible. Once in a while, I'd show up in like Airplane 2 and we'd laugh. We'd have a good time with that cameo or whatever. Without the internet, I don't think these people end up with these, you know, $80,000 appearance per appearance at a Comic-Con kind of thing that they get today. And it really got me thinking about that whole crew. And Will Wheaton, we love Will Wheaton, but everyone hated Wesley, but everybody loves Will Wheaton now. Why? Well, the internet provided a way, and I think that's great. But do I really need Shatner and Spock back together doing a scene?
Wait, it's Shatner's the guy from Boston Legal?
Yes. Well, he was. Yeah, yes. Yeah, he wasn't. You might be thinking of Captain Kirk, but yeah,
I know him.
A different guy. But do we need them together again? I don't know. I feel like I'm a little saturated on how many times can we dig up these guys and have us all have nostalgic nerd moments? You know? Am I wrong? Someone defend it. Defend
it. You are totally correct.
All right. Thank you for backing me up. Jules, how do you feel?
I can't defend it. I'm sorry. The two Star Trek movies that they did, and they brought in Nimoy for the second one, and it was, or the first one, and it was like, no, you don't do this anymore.
Bad cameo. Yeah, real bad.
It's just bad, and
you're,
I don't know,
all
why.
Overruled. It's a fantastic idea.
It's a terrible idea.
But at least for the first one, he was up. Part of the plot. I should go on record as saying I hate time travel stories. Yeah. Really, really hate. I have issues with time travel stories.
Mm-hmm. You'll fit right in here because I don't think any of us are huge fans.
I love time travel stories.
I mean, I was okay. They did it with Star Trek. It was a one-time thing. Time travel done. Whatever. But it gets really messy in like Doctor Who and annoys me. But
oh man,
which is entirely about time travel.
Yeah. So it's entirely about time travel. Yeah. I know. So anyway, I think I was okay with number one because he was part of the plot. Like he was part of the, but now it's just for the geekdom, I guess. And it's time. I think it's time. I think it's time to.
I absolutely want to see Shatner. I wanted to see him in Star Trek One, and apparently they couldn't give him a big enough part. So here's the thing, right? Generations, when they said, "Oh, we're gonna have Scotty there, and we're gonna have Spock there," and I was like. Wait, how are you going to have Chekhov? How is that going to work? That's horrible. How are they going to all show up at the next generation? They're going to be super old like DeForest Kelly was in the pilot. That's awful. And then the way they did it in Generations made sense, which it was a flashback.
Sure.
And so if that's how this is done somehow, right? It could be made so that it's integral to the plot. It's not time travel. Maybe it's Nimoy flashing back to something that happened between him and the captain. I don't know. The part that makes it difficult for me, because I actually do want to see this. I want to see Kirk ride again. I absolutely do.
Right.
How do you explain how he looks? Because he died when he was a lot younger in Generations.
Yeah, on that ladder, that hideous death on the ladder.
Are they going to pull him out of the Nexus or something? Like, I just...
Yeah, what was that? Was the space ribbon was the Nexus, right? That's what that was called?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have to retcon.
I have one right here. It's an excellent tablet.
They would have to. Careful, there's like a fake Christmas going on in that thing. You just don't know about it.
It feels really good. Whoopi Goldberg right inside of it.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg's in there. It feels really comfortable. You don't want to leave. It's real trouble. But here's the thing. I'm fine with, because they've already retconned the series, right? These new movies have said, new timeline. It's split off. It's Spock's fault. Now we're in a new timeline. So technically, that timeline doesn't involve perhaps Kirk chopping wood in Canada inside the Nexus. Okay.
But we see Kirk. We know who he is in that timeline, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we do, but we don't know where he ends up because he's a lot older when he ends up in that Nexus deal. You know what I'm saying? So maybe he never ended up in the Nexus in this timeline, but then they got to kind of explain that.
Then you're gonna have to bring in time travel again, and that's gonna piss Kristen off.
It really is.
Yeah, and by the way, I thought it was Tom, but it's actually
tell you, Robert Orsi. You don't. Piss
it's actually.
I just feel like we gotta let it's time. Like that, it's time to let the new cast just tell some new stories. Like
that aren't time traveler tied to these other guys.
We did. I'm not going to say who we did because that'd probably be a spoiler, but we did that too. Now.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm sorry. I know that I agree in principle with Kristen. Like, yes, let the new cast have their moment and let them shine. But I still feel like I don't feel like that didn't happen. Mm. Especially the second movie, it felt like, well, what? We had Leonard Nimoy show up in this timeline and then everybody just forgot about him. So I was glad that they acknowledged, like, oh, yeah, we haven't forgotten. He's still around.
Well, how about not big major plot?
The way they integrated him, I could have, you know, had it done better.
Sure, but how about no, let's just have cameos. So one of the things Star Trek did once that I really liked was in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and you had a trial going on in which Worf's grandfather, played by Michael Dorn, who played Worf, is the defense attorney for Kirk
spoiler!
And McCoy. I know, it's a big spoiler. Not really. But he's not even doing, they're not even making a giant nod to it. They're not going, hey, look, Worf's grandpa. They just put him in there and let him do his thing. And then behind the scenes, that's Worf's grandpa. He was a Klingon defense attorney. And
what if they do it like Tom Baker in the Doctor Who 50th anniversary, where Shatner's not necessarily playing Kirk?
I'd be fine with that. That's, I guess, what I'm saying. Do a creative cameo, a small bit that doesn't have to have a big story arc that somehow this is also Kirk from the future. Then I'm fine
with
it.
Stan Liam. You want a Stan Liam?
Yes.
There he is. He's the museum guard.
Yes.
I think that's probably what they were going to do in Star Trek 1. And Shatner was like, oh, no. I'm not doing it.
Oh, no.
No, he thinks he's still too big for that. He's at least another 5 years away from accepting
that
might be.
He's classically trained. He's a Shakespearean actor.
Yeah, he's really good.
Give him his respect.
All right, well, let's move on to this Marvel. Let's talk about Marvel. I know Kristen
loves Marvel. Yeah. Mish Sineath submitted an article about a new course on the spring 2015 curriculum at the University of Baltimore. The topic, the movies of Marvel Studios. Professor Arnold T. Blumberg told the Guardian newspaper that the course will examine the impact of films on a generation of moviegoers, and also study Joseph Campbell's hero's journey through the Marvel lens. Mm. The professor did not comment on whether this course was merely the first step towards an eventual Marvel Cinematic University, where students from the first course will appear in future courses and then eventually all team up in a further course down the road. And they probably have classes planned through 2028, I'm guessing. Sorry.
No, I liked it. You could have kept going. Jules, do you feel like your life has been positively impacted by quality, well-made Marvel movies?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right? It's better. It's a better world now.
It is, because this is what they're doing with these movies is making me want to sit my butt in a cinema.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when we've got things that we've got to do in our lives and we're busy and it's hard to find time to carve that out to go see a movie, these become priorities for us to go see. Guardians of the Galaxy was like, oh my gosh, you haven't seen it yet? It's been out for 5 days. Why haven't you seen it yet?
Yeah.
And I went and saw it twice. So it was like, but you know, and Kristen can talk about how when life gets busy and you're just like, oh my gosh, I got so much to do. And how am I going to find time to do this? But I think Marvel has a way to compel you to do it with your family, because you can take your kids with you and you can see these movies and enjoy it. And that is something, and now that they've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in there and they've carved out that whole timeline that's just linked right in there, it's freaking brilliant.
Well, Kristen, you used to work for Marvel. Did you ever imagine during those heady days? I interned.
I got paid in a Marvel jacket.
Wow, that's big money.
I got paid in that and a trading card of myself as She-Hulk.
Oh, sweet.
Drawn by,
wow, that's actually pretty good. I like that.
Limb there.
That's probably worth something. Hang on to that. That's awesome.
It's all framed and stuff. Okay, so first of all, when I was in college, I did take a class, a senior seminar, and I may have written a paper comparing the heroes of classical literature to the heroes in comic books. Mm. So I'm all on board with college having comics involved. And I will say, I am with you. The storytelling, it's so interesting how they thread it all together, and we do watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. here, and to see characters and actors from like Captain America showing up, and I'm like, wait a minute, where in the timeline? Okay, this must have been after he was frozen, but then, so it's, I mean, from that standpoint, it's really cool to see how they're pulling all the threads together. So I guess from a storytelling standpoint, that could be a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think about at some point, cultural impact.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, it's going to be about what the kids got out of it because they're going to be the future or whatever. But the way I always look at this, Tom, is like I've got a child in me that's still shocked we're getting it at all. And so I can't get over that part. Like, to me, it's hard for me to get past the whole, I can't believe this is happening. Can someone pinch me? I can't believe they're making these movies and that they're this good and all of that. At some point, it has to get past that and get to, what? Why are we choosing the narratives we're choosing? What is the analog to actual society at this time? They always talk about movies and television reflecting the times. And in what way are these Marvel movies, if at all, reflecting our times now? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to the old trope of like Shakespeare was a hack in his day, right? And the groundlings and the folks at the Globe Theater were essentially the same as all of us going down to see Marvel movies, you know? So there is probably a lot more going on in these movies than people think they should give them credit for because they're popular and they're current. Mm. But somebody on Twitter was like, can you believe this? They're doing Marvel in school. And I'm like, dude, when I was in college in 1990 or 89, one of those 2 years, I took an English course on film and the narrative of film, and we watched Aliens and Blade Runner. So, I mean, this is no different than that.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And we all go, like you said, we're looking back at the schlock of the Shakespearean time, and we look at it as this classical, important, ground-shattering, you know, thing, this cultural icon. But at the time, that was sort of, you know, beneath a lot of people and kind of just common entertainment. So it is often in retrospect these things matter, and I think that's probably how this will be treated because at some point this train ends. And we're not as enamored with superhero movies anymore, I think. I don't know. There's some argument about that.
You know, the other thing, Dan Carlin,
that's ever happening.
Yeah, latest episode of Common Sense made the point that if you want to really get people interested in history, you have to teach it backwards.
Yeah.
We teach history now by saying, let's start with, you know, the tool using man of the plains. And I was like, I don't really care about the tool using man. It has no reference to my life. Yeah. He's like, if you start by saying, hey, you guys are interested in cars in high school, let's start with cars. Let's talk about the auto industry. Let's talk about labor movements. And all of a sudden you're going backwards and you're teaching history. This is exactly the same thing. Like, guys into Marvel movies? Who's not into Marvel movies? All right. Well, let's talk about why they're constructed the way they are. And then tying it right into the hero's journey and Joseph Campbell and mythology. All of a sudden you're talking about really important things to learn about for critical thinking, and you're using the Marvel universe as an entryway to that.
Some people are quick to accept the idea that zombie culture, like we're so into zombie TV shows now and comics and movies, and it's got this resurgence and it's sustaining itself and everybody is into it, and that's some kind of like a parallel to nihilism in our society, and that's always been there, and what form does our entertainment take depends on what wars we're in and what protests are happening. And they're all willing to accept that. Like, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Study the zombie phenomenon because clearly that's saying something about us. But nobody wants to talk about why we're into spandex heroes who are saving the day. And I don't understand why they...
Well, now Professor Arnold T. Blumberg does.
Yep. Gosh dang it. Doing the good work. Doing Thor's work. Anyway.
Did you guys see the Oculus Rift prototype that was showed off this weekend?
Yeah, I want one.
Yes.
Yeah. The Crescent Bay. Mm. It looks apparently, by all accounts, a lot more comfortable, a lot more lightweight. And the best thing is the 360-degree head tracking plus the integrated headphones.
Yeah.
So you can turn all the way around, and you don't have to have a second wire coming into your head.
Jules, you want to play WoW this way? You want to put that on and go through the barrens with a helmet on?
I'm not sure. I don't
Come on. The old one. You know, so the original SDK did make me sick. Are you worried this new? I mean, are you like me and you get a little motion queasy when you do this stuff or what?
I totally do. And so it makes me a little bit nervous. But when seeing this, I actually had the visual from Ready Player One when they talk about the visor that they're wearing. This really felt like it was closer to something like that now. Mm-hmm. And I could see us being in this world and then all the implications thereof of, like, you know, visoring ourselves to be in our virtual worlds for, you know, 16 hours a day. But I am still I still like to have the ability to look around me and see that my cat is like climbing up the tree behind me or something, and he'll not have to be like, who is that noise? I have to take off my visor to see it.
And I think that's important moving forward, that these things are, that they at least understand this, because I feel like we're getting a force of will introduction of this technology. This isn't a thing where we're just going, oh, well, naturally the phones in our hands are going to evolve to be much more than that. This is more like, We're going to make this a thing everybody wants. We're going to figure it out. We're going to make it. We're going to force it with money and Facebook and you know, John Carmack. And we're going to make this thing till you are wearing it on your head and we're sure we all want it. But to me, there is still a piece of it that everyone's forgetting, which is there's an assumption we're all going to just wear this and they're going to get smaller and better. Of course, that's true. But we're just going to wear something all the time and that's just how we're going to consume everything. And I don't think so. I think it's more of an event thing. It's more of a... It's like, you know, you don't want to go on roller coasters all the time. Sometimes you want to just walk through a gallery and have that experience. Well, some would say, well, then you can have a VR walk through the gallery. So, Kristen, you want to wear a VR helmet all day? And is that how you want to consume your life? Or am I an old man and I'm kicking against the against progress?
I'm not putting that thing on my head, first of all.
Oh, good. Like, then you're an old lady. Perfect.
I'm such an old lady. No, and I have to say, I'm one who works in social media. I work in marketing advertising. I'm actually find myself these days kind of pulling back a little from all the digital and saying, like, I want the hands-on experience. I want the person-to-person experience. I logged off of Facebook 2 weeks ago. I've never been happier. Like, wow. Because I feel like I'm spending more time with the people rather than, like, the timeline. And so I'm not wearing that thing because I think I just have this vision of walking into my living room and everyone sitting on the couch with these like things.
Yeah.
And nobody, oh, we're engaging with each other in the virtual world. It's great, Mom.
But if the whole house, everybody's got one.
No.
Hold on now.
You can put one on my cat too.
Everybody's got one and you're doing something together. Let's say it's like if they could virtually replicate what it is like for all of you to sit next to each other in a big giant IMAX movie theater, which is one of the demos they showed off at this Oculus Connect conference in LA. Just imagine how cool that would be once in a while. I'm not saying all the time.
Right.
But if it's inexpensive enough to be just a thing you could do and you could still have those interactions and the togetherness is virtualized in really cool ways, it has a place, don't you think?
Maybe? I think it does. I mean, I have that now in my living room. But if I'm on a business trip somewhere and, you know, my kids are grown and we're all in different places, yeah, that would be really great to be able to say, like I really liked, my son was really into Wizard 101 a couple of years ago. What was great is when I was on a business trip, I would log in as my character and he would log in as his and we would go tromping around the magical landscape. You know, we were on the phone because he was too little for any interaction. But I don't know, like, I don't want it to replace the experience now, which is I'm snuggling on the couch with them.
Right. That's true. It'll have a place, but I'm with you in that it's not going to be, it may be for some, but I can't, it cannot be my new normal.
You know? And I always go into some of these. Like, I have very bad stereoscopic sight. So I have 3D doesn't work for me. So I'm always like, I don't even know if that thing would work for me.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions. I'd
be working so hard, like 3D TVs. Mm-hmm. Nope. Yeah. 3D movies. Me.
Same here. I have the same problems. So yeah, all that has to get worked out. Tom, they will eventually bend us to our will, but will our will bend as easily as iPhone 6 pluses?
Well. No. Do you have titanium struts in your will?
No.
That's my question.
No.
Then no, your will is going to bend a lot easier. Right. Yeah. Anybody got an event? iPhone 6 Plus? Anybody got? I don't even have an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus.
I have a 6. Not yet. Nothing's bent. I watched some video and I don't even know if that was real or not because who knows? We're on the internet now and who knows what's real anymore. But they had some muscle bound dude trying to bend one and couldn't. Is it much ado about nothing at this point, or are there real cases of this?
Apple, we talked about it on Wednesday. Apple would like to think it's much ado about nothing. They say they've only had 9 complaints out of 10 million plus phones sold, and so obviously it's a very rare issue. Mm. I think there are more than 9 complaints out there. I think that's kind of disingenuous of them to say, well, we've only heard 9 complaints.
Yeah.
There are a lot more people proving, like, hey, this thing bent, if you just go look on the internet. On the other hand, Cult of Mac had a great article where they said other phones of the same size and similar material also bent. This should not be entirely unexpected. I think it's just our typical when a new iPhone comes out, there's always an antenna gate anymore. Yeah.
You think that was the beginning? The antenna thing was the beginning, wasn't it?
No, actually, before that, we had yellowing screens.
Oh,
don't forget.
I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah, but it
in
does
fact,
seem...
On DTNS the other day, I did a brief history of iPhone controversies going all the way back to the yellow tint screen of the 3GS in 2009.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this. My iPhone 6 hasn't bent because I don't think you should try to bend your iPhone.
Do you keep it in your front pocket?
I keep it in my front pocket. Yes, I do.
You? I don't think you should be keeping it in your front pocket. And also, when does it stop becoming a phone and it becomes a tablet? Because, well, like, if it's that big,
I don't have a 6 Plus.
I'm not keeping it in any pocket.
So I didn't get a 6 Plus because I agree with you that thing's a fatty and I don't want it. So I don't want something that big. But I do like the size and the form factor of the 6. I have a case. I bought a silicone case on Amazon for it that was made for it. And that's added to the sturdiness of it. I don't ever feel like it's unsolid. Like I'm holding it now and kind of being a little bit manly with it, and it's being fine. And I wear it in the front pocket, but I don't, it's not like I've got tight pants all the time. I'm not like Mr. Tight Pants.
That's the thing, right? It's a combination of skinny jean hipsters and the iPhone 6 Plus. That's the deathly combo.
Well, then there, we know where to start with that problem. That's all I'm saying.
I got to say, though, this is my beef with the iPhone 6 Plus.
What's that?
There's, that phone is so big. And I'm sorry, but ladies' pants don't fit that kind of a phone.
Hey, Veronica, and you so, agree.
She's not yes, for your
pants.
Yes,
good outfits ruined by putting a phone in the pocket.
Yes, because I mean, all you have to do is outline the phone
and then somebody shoves the phone in their back pocket.
See? Wow. Yeah. My daughter puts hers in her back pocket. She thinks she wants a 6. I've tried to warn her. She has bent her 5 because she sits on it. So she'll just bend it again. Yeah, whatever. It's this is a, not an issue about what bends. This is an issue about how. What are we doing? What are we doing with our things? These are expensive, delicate devices, as sturdy as they can be, but they, you know, it's all. It's down to us not to be dumb. So don't be dumb. There's our PSA for today. Don't
brought
to you.
Bigger pockets for ladies, please.
Just put it in a bag.
Because then I can't tell if it's vibrating.
You know, as far as our society's come, I don't think anyone's ready for me to have a purse. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. I watch my husband with the wallet and the keys and the phone, and I'm like, dude, just grab a bag. Like, you look like a hobo with all this stuff stuck in your pocket.
You don't have
to
get a purse, Scott. You can get a bag. It could be a backpack or a shoulder bag or a messenger bag.
Yeah.
You know, don't think of it as like, oh, I'm going to get a nice, pack? Like, lacy blue purse.
A fanny pack. Hey, a bum bag for you Europeans.
Yes, exactly.
I'll get on that. That's my next purchase, a bum bag.
Bums.
Watch for that. Well, there you go. That's what's been going on in the world of stuff at the top of the show. But Tom's got a little something to tell us about now that will help you, dear listener.
Yes, because if you think that don't be dumb is good advice, you're probably an IT manager and you deal with people doing crazy things on their computers every day. It's a challenge, especially when you have remote or mobile employees like, hey, I'm on my bad iPhone 6 Plus and I can't get into VPN. You got to handle these tech support requests quickly, though. People want to maintain their productivity and you want to make sure your network security is never compromised now more than ever. That's why I highly recommend Citrix GoToAssist. It's the number one global market leader in remote support. Easy to use, cloud-based remote support solution allows you and your team to solve the problem faster than ever. Here's why. GoToAssist remote support lets you provide live and unattended remote support to any computer or mobile device. So the person you're fixing it for doesn't even have to be there. In fact, it sometimes might be preferable if they're not. But if they are there, you can screen share with the employee and diagnose and fix their support problems faster and more effectively. None of this like, now, do you see that gray box? No, you can just talk them. You can like actually be on the same screen with them. And you can use GoToAssist apps to deliver support from anywhere. You can deliver it from your not bent iPhone, iPad, or Android device. GoToAssist is easy to use. Sets up in less than a minute. Todd Whitehead uses it all the time to set up all the folks on Alpha Geek Radio, and it's a blast. It's a breeze.
Yeah.
Whether you're supporting one coworker or 10 or 1,000, if you work in IT, want you to try GoToAssist. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial, no contract. Put your credit card back in your man purse because you're not going to need it. Just visit GoToAssist.com, click on the Try It Free Now button, and after your free trial, if you purchase GoToAssist before October 31st, use the promo code GoToAssist3030, not 1930. It's GoToAssist3030 to receive 30% off the standard monthly rate. We thanks GoToAssist for making a great product and Citrix for their support of Current Geek.
Oh, that means this.
America scores and wins.
Okay, that music and that intro means only one thing. It's time for the pop quiz. Kristen, you've been through this hell before. You're going to do it again. And Jules, this is your first time. Are you two ready for this?
Yes.
Sounds like you're not
yes.
at all.
Yes!
Wow. All right. Well, I'm going to lay it down for you then. Kristen, we're going to start with you. You're the returner, so you get to go first. All right. That's one of the advantages of this. It's important to note for those at home and for you that if you get it right, any of these questions, you get this. If you get it wrong, you hear this. The entire time, Tom scores it in a fashion that is not unlike strange space technology that we don't understand yet. Right. So don't, you know.
I'll take that one.
There's no questioning it. We don't know what the hell's happening there. Can I get a ding for that?
Any sufficiently advanced scoring system is indistinguishable from magic.
That's right.
As Arthur C. Clarke once said.
That is absolutely true, and we hold to that here. So we're going to go ahead and do this. If I can just find the two quizzes. For some reason, they fell out of my view. I don't know. Oh, there we go. All right. Kristen.
Oh, if you had a man purse.
Well, if I had a man purse, yes.
That I was going to say, no, it feels important to remind you that, you know, I have two kids, so I have no information left in my brain.
Well, good, because
okay,
your category.
So you get a point for that.
Yeah. Your category is 80s TV trivia, and here it is. Number first question. What position did Sam Malone play in the Boston Red Sox? Now, you live in Boston. We should mention this. So cheers should be close to your heart, I suppose.
Cheers. What's a shortstop?
Let's find out. Relief pitcher is the correct answer.
Pitcher was the other one I was going to say.
You know, I'm going to give you a point for almost saying it.
All right. See?
Okay, thank you.
See? I don't ever know what to do with him. He's the soup Nazi of scorekeepers. It's the weirdest thing. Up next, what year did the Wonder Years debut?
Oh, God.
The, you know, the Fred Savage vehicle, that their show.
Yeah, Winnie there.
I was a fan.
Were you a fan? My daughter's now watching Girl Meets World.
Oh, that's a very 90s era version of that same sort of thing.
Yes, the brother.
Yeah.
Is in 1982.
Oh, you are so not close.
Not even remotely close.
1988 is the correct answer.
Really? That late?
You're going to get a point for that. It's in the 80s.
It was the... Wow, I'm getting a strong...
I'll be sending my check to you after this.
Yeah, no doubt. Next, who played District Attorney J.L. Fatman McCabe in Jake and the Fat Man? In other words, who played the Fat Man? I'll give you a hint. He did a lot of radio before doing TV.
Oh, that did not help me.
Probably not. Like old school drama stuff, like I play at the top of the show sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I have no idea.
Is that your answer? You have no idea?
That's my answer.
William Conrad is the proper answer.
Oh, that
actually, the answer was correct. She gets a point. Oh. She had no idea.
Man, Jules, I don't even know what yours is going to be like. I have no idea from
so
this.
Screwed.
What planet is Alf from? You know, Alf.
You should make these multiple choice. Have you ever considered that?
I have thought about that, but it'd be too easy. Alf is the, you know, he's the Muppet alien deal.
I know who he is.
All right.
My parents loved that movie. I mean, that show. That and Dinosaurs, I didn't understand.
I hated Dinosaurs. I really liked Alf, though.
I hated Dinosaurs.
Yeah, Dinosaurs is awful.
You notice how I keep trying to take these off topic.
Yeah, I did notice.
Oh, well, it wasn't Orc, because that's Mork. I don't know. Shabbat.
Melmac.
Yeah, but you got Orc right, so you're going to give her a point for that, right?
All right.
I
don't know
sweating.
Where this is going. Oh, you're sweating. Good. Then this is having its desired effect. Next question. What is the real name of Face Man on the A-Team?
Oh.
Not the actor name, but the name of the character.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Let's see. There's B.A. and there's Colonel and there's Face.
I should play this.
You got 30 seconds.
You don't really. You don't really. You have less than that, but.
Oh. I should have brought my husband in to help me with this. He would have gotten them all. I don't know.
Give up?
I don't know.
Templeton Peck is the correct answer.
I would have gotten that either.
Templeton Peck.
No point for that. You got to know
Templeton. Next up. Who did Fox originally offer the roles of Al and Peggy Bundy to before Ed O'Neill and Katie? Sackhoff got it. I don't know. My Facebook was making noise there. I apologize.
Things are beeping.
Yeah. It's all fixed now. So Al and Peggy were given to who? To what two people? I'll give you one hint.
How about the Griswolds?
They're both known for stand-up comedy before they were known for TV, if that helps.
How about Ben Stiller's parents? No.
Oh, is that not your answer? Sorry.
I don't know.
All right. Sure. All right, I'll give you that one again. Sam Kinison and Roseanne, of all people.
Ew.
I know.
I mean, weird. Those are essentially Ben Stiller's parents. I think we should give them.
That's basically
Jerry Stiller.
And
I don't know anything.
This is amazing. All right, next, second to last question. What kind of car was used to make Kit in Knight Rider? This should be easy.
A Trans Am? What is that?
You are correct. It is based on the Pontiac Firebird Trans Am.
So quick, too. You're going to get an extra point bonus.
Jeez Louise. I think I know what Tom's doing. All right.
Wait, Pontiac. Wasn't that GM?
Scoring the
Pontiac is a GM thing. Yeah. Well, yeah. Pontiac is GM, Chevy.
Panic Mommies is sponsored by Chevrolet.
Oh, good. And you got the right one then. Nice job. Way to go. Bonus in the next check from those guys. Final question. What year did MacGyver premiere?
Steve, what year did MacGyver premiere?
We don't have a phone a friend option.
Yes, I do.
This isn't cash cab.
You can't just year did MacGyver premiere?
Stick your head out on Broadway.
I don't know,
honey.
Hurry up and finish your podcast. 1982.
1985 is the correct answer.
Not close enough.
Tell your husband no go, man. He loses.
He's like, what? He's in the basement.
That's amazing. Tom, don't score him yet because there is still one more to go. And
right?
Jules, are you ready for your questions? These are World of Warcraft trivia. You ready?
Oh, boy.
You ready for this?
Yes.
All right. Get that think tank back on that you normally have on for the Torrens and use it for yourself. Here it goes.
Okay.
At what level do hunters learn steady shot?
Oh, crap. I don't play a hunter.
This would be currently, by the way.
Steady shot would be level 10.
3 is correct.
Ow!
Close, level though. 3. It's within 10.
Give her a point.
Give her a point for that.
My theory.
And level compressions throw everything.
Right. And all that number crunching they're going to do, it's going to mess it up.
Yeah.
In what zone is Skolomance, in the instance of I never say it right, Skolomance located?
Eastern Plaguelands.
You are incorrect. It is Western Plaguelands. So close.
Plaguelands.
These are hard.
So close.
Let's not encourage the East-West rivalry that's already bad enough in Plaguelands.
Give him a point.
Yeah.
All right, you got a point.
For peace.
Next up, how many yards does a mage teleport when using the blink ability?
30.
You are incorrect. It's 20 yards.
Well, that's an unfair question. They don't actually teleport in yards anyway. So I'll give you a point for that.
Virtual yards.
Oh my gosh, I love you so much.
What area in Mulgore do Tauren players start? Like which of the little outshoot things?
Oh, I'm going to get in so much trouble.
I know. You literally host a show called the Tauren Think Tank.
I know.
I just want that
I
to be
just
known.
Did the starting area too. It's can't remember. I don't know.
It is Red Cloud Mesa is the correct answer.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, see, she knew it then. All right. There
I have no idea how this is going to work.
I have neither.
I don't know what's going to happen here. All right. Next up, what are the three specializations for warriors?
Protection.
Yep.
Fury.
Yep.
And arms.
You are correct on all three. Nicely done.
Yes.
What zone is Tauren Mill located in?
South Shore.
Hillsbrad Foothills.
I am so dumb.
Answer.
Wait, South Shore of the Hillsbrad Foothills is what you meant to say, right?
Yes.
Oh, well then.
That's sick. Yeah.
Well then, of course.
The Game of Thrones reference.
What specialization tree is the rogue ability Blade Fury located in? Blade Flurry, excuse me.
Blade Flurry.
Blah.
Let's do assassination.
You are incorrect. It is combat. Combat rogue. Or some call them com rogues, which is stupid. They should just say combat rogue. Final
that
question.
Is stupid. I think we should give her a point. That's a stupid question.
Yeah, see? Right. I don't know who wins this thing. What is the range of the warlock spell Immolate?
Oh, it is. There is no range.
Well, there is, but it's not.
Okay.
It's not a
I'll
thing.
Say,
yeah. Anyway.
I'll say 10 yards.
You are incorrect. It is up to 30. You could go up to 30 with Immolate.
Yards. There's no yards.
All right, Tom. This is the first time I really have no idea how you're going to do this. So how did they do?
Well,
listening to foreign language.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Jules got a 300 point unfair question, multiple unfair question bonus, and a 200 torrent, just being a torrent bonus. Yeah. Kristen got a 500 anxiety bonus.
Wow.
So at the end of this, it ends up very close. Jules, 508 points, and Kristen, 509.
Wow. Oh, amazing. Wow. Amazing, everybody.
My husband just walked in here. He's like, what were you yelling about? And it's so like, I put it on mute. I go, what year did MacGyver premiere? He goes, I don't know what, 85? I was like, son of a...
Sonny, it's like, honey, why are you so sweaty? What's going on in here? Everything all right? Jeez. Take
What's
a,
the problem?
Take a
you know,
chill
I
pill.
Tell you that I saw the Bad News Bears last night, and you think that makes me a TV expert.
That's right. And that's not even a TV show. That's the best part of that.
That was the most. I haven't seen that in a while.
Did it hold up? Was it any good? Was it garbage? Was it more sweary than you remember? Like,
it was very good once you get past the fact that Walter Matthau was, you know, smoking cigars and drinking beer while coaching the kids.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of words that afterwards I was like, dude, I think I might have to explain these, but I really don't want to because I don't want them in their vocabulary.
I remember watching that at like, I don't know, I probably was 8. Maybe, and it was the dirtiest movie I'd ever seen in my life.
I have a new appreciation for PG-13 as a rating,
because
what you realize is that there is a steep, like, PG to PG-13 and PG-13 to R.
Yeah, it's a big jump.
It's a big jump, and so you're watching all these, because there was no PG-13.
Yeah.
So you're watching all the, you know, and the kids are using the worst language.
And by the way, I know PG-13 started in 1984. Oh, look at Scott. You got a point for just saying stuff. Nice job, Scott.
All my daughter came away with was, because she plays softball, is that a girl had to be recruited to win the game.
Oh, right.
As the pitcher.
I forgot that plot point.
That's what she took from
it. Well, then good, right? You want that.
Right.
Independence, everybody. And also that, not Haley Joel Osment. What's his name? Joel... something Joel, whatever, that actor that would played Rorschach in the he's in that. He's a kid. It's weird.
He's a thug.
He's kind of a thug, also a kid. All right,
thug kid riding a Harley.
That's right, like a good thug kid will do.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
That guy signals in what we call forecast. It used to be a show. Kristen, you've been on that show too. It's now a segment, and we do it here on the show. We talk about things that we think maybe the future holds, and today I threw one in here I think is just prescient to the conversation, which is Blizzard will never make another MMO again. That the market is both owned by them and destroyed by them because of them, and is no longer a thing they want, and they don't need to top themselves. And I think it actually probably forecasts the idea that they will continue to build on the Warcraft brand by either doing a full-blown sequel, or WoW will continue to evolve in much more drastic ways. Because now there's not another side-by-side sort of parallel MMO development happening. They can throw all of their guts behind it and maybe take bigger risks with it, knowing that the future is a little less settled for what MMOs are or will be. Jules, this is mainly for you, because I really want to know what you think about that.
Well, this actually, if that were the case, it would really surprise me. Because the thing about MMOs that has been so strong and kept World of Warcraft going for 10 years now is the community and the people, the bonds that people make with each other and the game that they play together. And everybody loves the game and all of that, and that they want to do all the things. But when you ask anybody who's been playing this game for more than a year and why they still play this game, it's because of the people that they play it with.
Yeah.
And when that fades, when that goes away, when the people go away, that's when people tend to go and find something else to do.
But these same people have left in chunks and said, all right, our entire guild is now going, and we are super stoked about Old Republic. So we're going to go play that. And 2 months later, they're all coming back to WoW. Now all their friends went with them, and now all their friends are coming back because there is something there that Blizzard's doing that others aren't doing. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what the magic sauce is. You can point to small examples of it, but whatever the total package is that keeps drawing people back, that's still enough to bring the friends groups you're talking about, who might even be tired of playing. There's still something there that keeps them coming back there.
Because WoW is the litmus test. When you go to another game, you're comparing it exactly to what you've gone, what you came from. Mm-hmm. And it, when you say, oh, I love the instancing in this game. It's awesome. It's really cool. But WoW does this better, and it does this better, and it does this better. And I'm just happier in that game. So I'm going to go back to that game. And that's what I see. I mean, I was watching Twitter this week, and people were talking about Destiny, which is an MMO. And they're sort in there
of,
going,
sort of.
Yeah. It's but it's, weird. And it's, trying to be an MMO in a console space, which is a whole different story.
Yeah.
But the MMO experience has to have the personal contact or it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so you see that, though. You see people migrating their entire guild to a new game, but then they go back. And you're right. It's because there's that secret sauce of Blizzard that just kind of keeps them there. But I think it's also that nothing has really made them feel like they could just leave that whole thing behind.
Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of crack. I don't know.
Mm. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, nobody talks about EverQuest still retaining its giant numbers after WoW came. But I don't know. I just feel like there is just going to be it's a weird future when Blizzard themselves bows out of an MMO race with their own selves. In a very real way, that's what they do here with Titan. I mean, it may have not have been just fun enough at all, period. But it's also their, you know, them saying, and Morhaime made lots of comments about how this is just, it's not working. Like, it's not coming together. And do we really want to go out right now and make another MMO? And he basically said, will we ever make one? Well, we're not taking it off the table. But that to me sounded like them saying, we're going to focus on what we know and what we're already got going and on smaller projects and on other stuff that we, you know, that we maybe can feel better about or whatever. So it's an interesting future. Kristen, any thoughts in this regard? I know it's a game you don't play.
So I'm not a World of Warcraft. We haven't player and my son hasn't gotten there. I have noticed that more of his games, our son is 12, has this multiplayer component to them almost as the default.
Is he playing Minecraft stuff or what's he up
he
there?
Played well so he was playing Titanfall. Mm. And one thing I noticed right away was like had to be connected to the internet because there are the people that are in there and I was like, have we just given up on like create programming characters because we just figure we can just throw the community of people in there and then they're all the extras. But it didn't last for him. There was no connection for him. And now he's playing Destiny. He has gone the Destiny route. And part of it is he's so young. I haven't let him really start to, you know, meet people, connect with people so that he has that experience of it. But it's certainly reaching the point where more and more games have it. So, you know, for me, I can see why they're struggling with it because while it's not the same, it's not really an MMO on a game or on a gaming device that like the Xbox.
Yeah.
There's a lot more competition for connections.
Sure.
So I think it'll be interesting. You know, I think it's interesting. I don't know enough about like how many you say they keep coming back, but are new people signing up at the same level?
Yeah. See, that's the big trick. And Tom, you and I have talked about this before because it's the kids are all into Minecraft. They're into different experiences. They're into less curated experiences and they're more into this or competitive playing in things like League of Legends. Like the kids are kind of in a very different place. And that's partly why you see Blizzard not scrambling, but working hard to bring experiences like Hearthstone and Heroes of the Storm and these other kinds of experiences and games that feed more into that up and coming generation of gamers that maybe aren't so much into World of Warcraft. And it seems to me that that's smart on their part and maybe part of why this got canceled. You know, because maybe that's not the experience those kids want.
Yeah, well, if you believe Kotaku and their long article about what they knew about what Titan was, it sounded like a really interesting game for 7 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It's a big, wide-ranging world in a new setting with new characters, but it's factions and it's fighting and its crafting aspect was different. But I get the feeling that what Blizzard realized was we just built a game that will be popular with our existing subscribers. Mm-hmm. And Minecraft is out there as something that has expanded into play people that have never played Warcraft. If we're going to spend a lot of money putting out a new game, we need to put out something that's either going to expand our audience or you know, really solidly keep people in our existing properties, not be something entirely new. And I feel like they may be taking a page from the comics universe and saying, we have really strong superheroes here. StarCraft, Diablo, Warcraft. Mm-hmm. why come up with a new superhero at this point? Where it's not going to pay off as well. Let's double down on those. Hearthstone being an example of like, hey, it's still in the Warcraft universe, but it's a different kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I actually think, well, I still say if they made a StarCraft MMO, I'd play it like nobody's business. Like, I would be so into that. And you know what? You can almost just skin WoW with with StarCraft, and I would play the hell out of that.
Well, I wonder, you know, you said all of them took 7 years or a lot of time. And maybe they just don't have that luxury anymore. Maybe things are coming out so quickly and they're so sophisticated that they and they're not as deep. I mean, I know, you know, it's hard for my son as he wanted to buy Destiny. And then my husband was like, I read the reviews. I hear it's terrible. Mm. You know, and I'm like, OK, well, guys, like, let's come to a moment. Like, it's his money. You're scaring him. And some of the things, well, because he's like $60. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
That's a big deal for a 12-year-old. And I think part of it is just, it, as I understand it, it's not as deep as some of these other games. Maybe it doesn't have as many levels or it doesn't have the same game. Like, but
you
maybe
have the
that's
right. You have the
issue.
Right.
They have they have to be coming out with them more quickly. I mean, he's still going to play it.
I completely agree with you. I think that is exactly right. And Destiny has been in the works for 6 years, but even that kind of hurt them. And even then, there's some things that are definitely rushed to market. It's just, it is a very different gaming market, and mobile and other casual experiences have sort of changed the landscape of it all. Can a company like Blizzard, who has, you know, built themselves over 25 years as a company willing to take things as long as they need to take to make them great, is that as viable as it once was? And can they maintain that? I don't know. They have enough money to maybe maintain it for a lot longer than anyone else now. Thanks to World of Warcraft, but you know.
And my other thought, just from our perspective, I've got one son who is spending $60, and I've got a daughter who's like 99 cents. I got a game. Like, they're totally different audiences.
Yeah.
You know, she will never understand spending anything more than $1.99 for a game. That is what has happened
right.
to her.
And we now live in a universe where Electronic Arts' largest revenue came from Simpsons Tapped Out in 2013.
Because my daughter loves that game.
No other game made as much money. And it's a free game on iOS and Android. Like, that has to be, that is on everybody's flow charts. That's on everybody's Venn diagrams at these companies. They all understand that this is a place they have to compete in. Blizzard's doing it with Hearthstone. Others are doing it in other ways. I just think we're embarking in a new place. They bring VR into that, and that changes everything. Like, it's just it's a weird transitional time, for sure. But anyway, yeah, what a fun topic, guys. That's what Forecast's all about. I really enjoyed that, and I enjoyed the hell out of this episode. You two were fantastic guests.
Yay!
Thank you for being here.
Terrible quizzers, but... Yeah. I know, we really are.
Really fun. It's the highest scoring quiz we've ever had.
Yeah, we've never had these kind of points. I didn't even know Tom had a calculator that went that far.
Yeah, you always invite me on the show that has like work. Like, predict the future. Answer these questions.
That's right. Putting you to task.
Exhausting.
Mother Brandt. Well, it's good to have you both here. Let's give you a little space to tell people where they can find more about you. Jules, where is the best place for people to find more about you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at JulesRPG. My show, Torn Think Tank, is at Torn Think Tank on Twitter. It's a World of Warcraft podcast about the World of Warcraft player. So we talk about the interpersonal side of WoW and the community, and it's totally fun.
I've guested once. It was fan-freaking-tastic. It's a great show.
I loved having you there. It's just like I could talk to Scott Johnson for like 10 hours, and then we'd get nothing done.
That's true. I barely get – when we see each other at events and things, it's hard to get anything done. But it's you're doing the Lord's work over there.
Oh, thank you.
Lord – who's a good Lord in World of Warcraft? I can't think of one. Anyway, you're doing
Jiraxis?
Lord Jiraxis. You're doing Lord Jiraxis's work. Nice, Tom. Jeez, pulled that one right out.
Well done, Tom.
Well done. Kristen, where can people find more of you and the Manic Mommies?
So Manic Mommies is a podcast for moms managing the chaotic combination of work and family. You can find us at manicmommies.com. And we're 5 episodes away from episode 400, which is a little astounding.
Wow.
And I'm on Twitter at Kristen, KristinSB. So I guess that's it.
I've known you longer than I've even known Tom. How weird is that? That's weird.
That is so weird. And yet, still never met.
Still
you.
Never met. Met Tom a
I've met
dozen
Kristen.
Times. Yeah, you've met right. Kristen. I don't know what's wrong with this picture. Something's up.
I'm gonna make it out to that
Nerdtacular's the one. Yeah.
I'm gonna.
All right. Yeah. It's so funny. It's so cute. You think it's still about a movie. I think that's so cute.
I, you know, it makes me happy to think of it that way.
That's all right. It's always good to have you on, and you two are now on the list of people we'll call back. So enjoy Absolutely. That feeling.
Yay. Anytime you can't find guests on a Friday night, this is where I am.
Tom, anything we want to leave people with before we cut out?
Tech History October, the 10th in the series and the 12th we've put out because we, you know, put them out month by month. So 10 October is available. Go to Amazon.com, search Tech History October, and probably by the end of today or early tomorrow, I'll have it up on TomMerrittBooks.com. But you can get all the months now where we talk about the things that happened each day in the month in technology history. And there's illustrations by Scott in there.
Yeah. 99 cents.
Yeah. You don't got 99 cents. Come on.
I'm very proud. I don't know why I care to bring this up, but I'm super proud of the drawing I did for the introduction of the iPod. I don't know what it is about that image, but
I like that one too. Yeah.
It just feels good.
You captured some kind of feel there with the old fashioned looking iPod.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Something about that. Anyway, you can get it for, it's a buck, you guys, a freaking dollar. So go get that. I think that's going to do it for us. Let me tell people where they can find us. CurrentGeek.com, CurrentGeek.reddit.com, at CurrentGeek on Twitter, at Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect. CurrentGeek@gmail.com is our email address. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our lovely guests. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the rise of subprime auto loans and the legality of electronic devices that lenders are using to ensure timely payments from these high-risk borrowers. According to a report this week in the New York Times, subprime auto loans, which are car loans made to those with low credit scores below 640, are accounting for nearly 30% of all loans in 2014. But in about a quarter of those loans, the lenders are installing electronic devices called starter interrupters into the cars. These disable a car's ignition when the borrower is late to make a payment. This is effectively a new technological form of electronic repossession of the vehicle, and lenders say that these devices are critical to negating the risk usually associated with subprime auto loans. But are the lenders breaking consumer laws by extorting payments in this manner? Some lenders are employing virtual repo men who actually give borrowers a chance by calling them multiple times and waiting 30 days before using the starter interrupter, but others are acting far more quickly. Although state laws vary, the terms of auto loan contracts are typically forced to allow for at least 30 days of being behind on payments before the right to repossess is allowed by the default, and any repossession cannot include a breach of the peace, meaning use of physical force or opening a closed garage, for example. It could be argued that these devices do breach the peace when used away from a home or workplace setting. Of course, the device manufacturers and lenders believe that this disabling of the vehicle is not actually a repossession. It will be interesting to see how this theory works out if challenged many times in court. The bottom line is, this is a gray area of law, but states will eventually be forced to define exactly how these new technologies are governed in the auto loan context. One would expect that the largely defenseless, struggling consumers will win the day eventually. But for now, the banks hold all the power and wield it heavily, whether it's actually legal or not. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hi, I'm Jeannie, and we're exploring some of the history of Westeros in Game of Thrones. This time we'll be talking about the Wall. The Wall defines the northern border of the Seven Kingdoms and is defended by the Brothers of the Night's Watch. It runs in a straight line from East Watch by the Sea to Castle Black. However, it does snake through the mountains between Castle Black and the only other manned tower along its length, the Shadow Tower. It was reportedly created over 8,000 years before the events we are currently witnessing. Brandon Stark, also called Bran the Builder, used magic to erect the wall after the events of the Long Night. It is designed to keep the wildlings and the others, also called the White Walkers, out of the realms of men. The stories say it was not as high back then, and the Night's Watch have continued to build on it throughout its history. The wall is a colossal structure made of solid ice. It is 300 miles long, 700 feet high, and the top is wide enough that 12 mounted knights can ride abreast. The base of the wall is even wider. There are no gates the entire length, only a few tunnels that cut through it. They are secured with iron bars and massive chains. I love hearing the questions you have about the people and places in Westeros. You can reach me at TyrionsLanding.com or TyrionsLanding on Gmail and Twitter. The music used is by Kevin MacLeod.
information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Hey, don't forget, if you'd like to support this show and help us out, there is another way to do it, and that is to support us at our Patreon, patreon.com/frogpants. It helps Current Geek and other shows survive and thrive on the Frog Pants Network. That's patreon.com/frogpants. Thanks, everybody.